anybody other than TIFR members about today's lecture. Let me confess, I did not inform anybody else other than TIFR members today, but this is the kind of crowd I have seen at the gate. It was just overflowing. Gate was continuously calling me time after time, another 10 people, another 10 students, 20 students, etc. So that is the kind of response that we have for today's speaker, which is in some sense quite obvious knowing his, you know, how popular he is among many of our students. And many of us, of course, read his books and graduated in science and so on, and it's all known. So today we have Professor H.C. Verma
from
Bilkul, Bilkul.
Professor from IIT Kanpur, who is here to speak about big learning from simple experiments. And again, these experiments are already getting set up as you come. You can see the way, I mean, he literally just came into the institute from airport, so didn't even take a breath for a minute, but he's here straight away to start interacting with you all. Okay. And before I introduce, as I said, it doesn't require introduction, but let me still spend a few minutes. By the time he sets up his experiments, the asset would like to thank Professor Dathar, Vivek Dathar, who is here, whom we met recently in some interview, in a part of an interview committee or something, and then he invited him. So we would like to thank him. Also, of course, Arnab and Co, the outreach committee, they are also here making lots of arrangements. Professor H.C. Verma did his MSc and PhD from IIT Kanpur and joined its faculty in 1994. There is a story before that. He also taught at Patna College, Science College, for about 15 years before he joined. And to share some real interesting facts from Wikipedia, you know, he passed MSc from IIT Kanpur with 9.9 out of 10. So that is the statistics. Okay, one more statistic. He did his PhD in less than 3 years from. Right. Okay. That's all from Wikipedia, nothing more than that. Okay. And he has worked on a number of areas, both theoretical as well as experimental, but mostly his center theme has been research work, has been on the study of condensed matter using both experimental techniques of nuclear physics. So he published, of course, a large number of papers, about 150 of them. And he has authored several books. I know the most popular one, which has brought to you here, is Concepts of Physics, both two-volume book. Also equally popular books are on quantum mechanics and foundations of science. And of course, Professor Verma, apart from well-known as a teacher, he also worked on varieties of things, including several, he was associated with several NGOs and organizations like Shiksha, Sopan, School Physics Project, Utsahi Physics Teachers, and so on and so forth. And of course, he is well known for all his video lectures that are all available on YouTube and various journals, because of which we all know the basic concepts of physics and so on. I think I can keep saying many more things. I think he's ready now for his experiment. Let us listen to him and see what the magic that he is going to do on this table for the next about an hour or so. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you, sir, for this very nice introduction. And it's 1 hour talk, right? It's 1 hour. Now, for these kind of experimental demonstrations, 1 hour is a very, very short period. So. But the background has to be given, otherwise the whole show will not have much of meaning. And the background is that I did my schooling at a place called Ram Mohan Rai Seminary, Patna, small place, not a public school, not a government school as well. Okay, so did not get much interest in science or in studies, although I was regarded as a very brilliant and very nice student who grasped things very quickly and all those things. But still my teachers will always give me F grades in the examinations. So in almost all examinations in my schools, class 6, 7, 8, 9, during all half yearly examinations, I was those red cross marks were always there. if you get less than 30% and you are declared failed, then the red marks are given on that. So 4, 5, 6 red marks on my grade card. But the teachers will say that it's Harish Verma is really very sharp and very good and this and that. So that was the kind of history. And then I came to Patna Science College for my plus two. That time it was pre-university science and like that, names were different, but essentially plus two. So I did plus two from Patna Science College, and there it was there that my interest came out. And that was mostly because of the wonderful laboratory that Patna Science College had for plus two. The lab, huge lab of physics and huge lab of chemistry, 75 students doing experiments at the same time in the lab, and absolutely a lot of free space for moving like atoms or molecules in a glass, in a container. A lot of free space was there, and still 75 students are doing experiments. So that was a wonderful experience, and from there, and on top of everything, they used to have a veranda lab. Right, veranda lab. So from the building, when I come out and go to the road, there is a veranda. In that veranda, they will put varieties of things depending on what is going on in the class. If they have taught lenses, mirrors, so when that particular day or in that week, when I go to the road from the department, I will see that there are so many lenses are there, so many torches are there, so many prisms are there, and all those things. Similarly for electricity, similarly for mechanics, and no teacher will be there, only the material will be there. So any student who wants to play with that will go there, spend some 5 minutes, and then go away like that. So that veranda lab was very, very impressive. So these were the environments in which I could generate or I could rediscover my interest in science, and from there all the red marks have gone. And you said 9.9, thanks to Indira Gandhi ji. Indira Gandhi ji is responsible for my 9.9/10, otherwise it would have been 10/10. And how Indira Gandhi is related to my 9.9 and 10, that is also a useful story. The course in which I got B, the only course in which I got B, was given by a professor called A.P. Shukla at IIT Kanpur. And during the emergency, 1975 to 77, there was emergency, many of you must be knowing. So during the emergency only, it was 1976-77 session, he was giving me course on quantum mechanics, advanced quantum mechanics. He had already given me a first course, and he had already given me a. Now, during that period, just 2 weeks before the final semester examination, one morning we learned that Dr. A.P. Shukla has been arrested by police. Right, police came to his house something like 2 a.m. in the morning or in the night, whatever you call, 2 o'clock, and then picked away and put Dr. A.P. Shukla in jail with the charges that he was disrupting the railway track in front of IIT Kanpur, or cutting those wires, electricity wires, like those. And he remained in the jail for till the end of the emergency. Till the end of the emergency. Only when the elections, 1977 elections were there, and the government changed, government was changing, only then he was released. And because of all this disruption, some new faculty member was put there to complete the course and have the examinations. And you know, in the IIT system, the instructor is very important. Okay. So if you all of a sudden change the instructor in 2 weeks of time, I do not know what this instructor means and what this instructor wants and what is the priority and all those things. So the entire mishap happened like that. And of course, there were several courses in which I did not deserve A, and the professor at IIT Kanpur gave me A. That is fine. But the place where I deserve A, there they gave me B because of this emergency and this jail and all those things. Anyway, so after that I joined Patna University as was told, and I was there for about 15 years teaching class 2, and the book Concepts of Physics came out from that experience of interacting with plus 2 students of middle type of city. Okay, in Bihar, Patna Science College means very brilliant students will come there, but they will be from smaller cities, Muzaffarpur, Bhagalpur, and Supaul, Siwan, like that. So I interacted with them, and from there this concepts of physics came out. When I came back to IIT Kanpur as a faculty and started interacting with BTech students, BTech first year students, then I realized that there is a big problem in our school system. The students who have passed JEE and who have come to IIT Kanpur, they are not having any feeling of science, they are not having any emotions with science, they are not having any understanding of science, they are not able to logically think, they are not able to connect two different things. So that was an eye-opener when I started interacting with BTech students so closely, and then I started doing all these things, interacting with physics teachers of schools. So for last 14-15 years I am interacting with physics teachers at a school, at all level, primary school, middle school, high school, plus 2, and also now in the BSc. So I am trying to see how that the objectives of science education, when I am moving here and there in different areas, sometimes rural areas, sometimes metros and all those things, I find that universally, be it a big public school or be it a village school, universally the science is being taught where no science element is there. The way science is being taught in our system, absolutely unscientific, absolutely unscientific. Entire questioning spirit, entire curiosity, entire analyzing power, entire faith and love for subject, everything is missing from the system. Connection with life is not there. That's the central point. I discovered that perhaps all these things are because it is not connecting to the real life, and what we are teaching on the board and what we are asking in the examination has nothing to do with the life situations. And we have such a big opportunity, especially for physics people, we are privileged. We have such a big opportunity. Nature has given everything to us so liberally. Be it light, the light is here. Be it electricity, electricity is here. The magnetism, magnetism, earth itself is a magnet. So the entire nature is our laboratory, and still we are not utilizing that strength. So that is a real problem. So during these 14-15 years, we have designed, and we means what? I and a group of some 7-8 young people who are living near IIT Kanpur campus. It's a rural type of environment, and all these students who are working with me, which is my team, some 7-8 people, it's floating. So some people will go, some people will come. They are all coming from economically quite poor background. Okay, it will be son of a rickshaw puller or someone who is doing daily wages work in like mason or labor or like that. So those people are working for me, with me, and what we have done in these 14-15 years, we have interacted with some 4,000-5,000 of teachers, and not only interacted with 4,000-5,000 of teachers, we keep track that who in this group can be taken ahead, and then we follow it up, and 2 times, 3 times, 4 times continuous interaction, and I am satisfied that at the personal level, without any institute support, without any government support, without any big corporate house support, just an individual effort with some 4-5 villagers, we could enthuse some of the teachers to the extent that in their own region, they are all school teachers or college teachers, but in their own regions, they have established informal laboratory like that, which we called Anveshika. So there are 24 Anveshikas in India, and these 24 Anveshikas are doing this kind of work. They are in their area, they are going to teachers, they are going to students, and new experiments are being developed and all those things. So this is the top, and then of course it's a pyramid. So maybe 1,000 teachers have started loving their subject. Then of that, some 100 teachers have made their own this jhola, and then those 24 are right out there to doing this outreach at their own level without any government support, without any institutional support, doing all the work in the school and or in the college. So those kind of things are going on. So we have some, I do not know, we are very poor in documentation because we are always busy in either doing the show or developing the content, new experiments. So some 4 or 5 years ago, till that time, we used to write at least the heading of a new experiment if we designed. So that time this number was around 350 or so. And after that, we even left that. So in these 4 or 5 years, we have developed many more experiments, and this number could be around 600 or so, I do not know. But now we have no documentation for that. Okay, so that's the background. And this route I have chosen because this route, these are small experiments, short, 1 minute, half a minute, 10 seconds experiment. Of course, our experiments range from 10 seconds to 1 hour also. So we have varieties of experiments. We have a national competition for experiment, National Anveshika Experimental Skill Test. I do not know if there is any other competition of doing experiments in India. There are so many Olympiads and this and that, mostly filling the bubbles. But then performing an experiment and that skill being evaluated, and for that a national award is given. So these kind of activities are going on, and what we have seen, we have experienced that these kind of small experiments can really give you big learning. That is why the heading. And not only learning of the subject, more important is those characteristics, questioning, spirit of questioning. Those are more important. Content is okay. You are learning a particular concept in a better way, that's fine. But then those characteristics can be developed through these things, spirit of questioning or analyzing or designing a solution. A problem is there and then designing a solution. In our schools, we have in the name of experiments, if there are, okay, in Kanpur University, there are 1100 colleges and 225,000 students are enrolled every year in BSc program. Okay, and out of these, about 2,000 are lucky enough to sit in a classroom where a lecture is delivered. 2,000 out of 225,000. So forget about lab and everything and other things. Even the classroom, I am telling, that's the Kanpur University situation. So even if there is a experiment, even if there is a lab, so-called good institution, good college or good school, what kind of experiment are done there? Find the value of G with simple pendulum. Why should I find that? Why? I know it. I know it is 9.8 meter per second square, and if I find it 10.8 meter per second square, I will be given zero. Why should I measure? Hundreds of thousands of students every year are measuring value of G. It's pure nonsense. And no experimental skill is being developed through that. Okay, fine. I know it is 9.8. But if an experimental skill is being developed in performing the experiment, I'm still okay with that. But no, all the instructors, all the teachers will sit somewhere else, and students will be doing some experiment here. They are not learning anything new. And then they will go to the teacher with that sheet where all the table and graphs are there and value of G is calculated. And the teacher will only see the end line, the final line, G is equal to how much? No experimental skill is being developed. No design of a solution is being developed. No questioning is there. No innovation is there. So those are the kind of experiments in the top schools and colleges where there is a lab and there is an experiment. It's very rare now that the college has a lab and then there are periods assigned and students go to the lab and do some experiment. It's very rare. But even there, what kind of learning, what kind of science attributes are being inculcated, parameters are being, the skills are being developed, what kind of? That's the big problem. Many times I think that how TI forgets such learned professors and such learned staff and such learned research students, TIFR and all other national institutes. So this was a puzzle for me for a long time, that if our education system is such, it's killing all those scientific things which we have naturally within us, it's killing that. Even then we are doing wonders. At world level, in many areas we are doing wonders in science research area. So repeatedly in 2014, when I listened to Narendra Modi so many times, 125 crore ka desh, I got the answer. Ye 125 crore ka desh hai. आप कितना भी प्रयास कर लो साइंस खत्म करने का, 10-15 हजार तो निकल ही आएंगे जो आपकी बात नहीं मानेंगे और अपनी ओरिजिनलिटी को, अपनी क्यूरियोसिटी को, अपने साइंटिफिक स्पिरिट जो नेचुरली है उसको बचा के रखेंगे, 10-15 हजार तो निकल ही आएंगे. बट इफ द सिस्टम कैन डिलीवर, if the system can be in tune with national objective requirement, we have to produce people who think scientifically, who can come out with innovative ideas, who can come out with new designs of a problem and its solution, who have experimental skills, you can think where India can go. Okay, so that's the background with which we are doing all these things. It's not just khel tamasha. So let's start those. I just want to give you a glimpse what kind of experiments we do and what kind of physics comes out and what kind of brain training comes out from that. Okay, so my first experiment would be this matchbox. It's an empty matchbox. I knew it is 25th of January, so there will be a lot of security checking at airport and they will not allow me to take matchbox. And it happened like that. When my bag was going through that x-ray, it was stopped and they asked what it is. I say, I know, I have to show. I have many things which you will be objecting, but I'll explain. So many things are, all these things are there. So they asked for each one, what is this, why that, and so on. And then they saw this matchbox lying in a corner. And they said, this matchbox you cannot take. And then I showed them, it's not a matchbox, it's only dabba. So I opened it and I showed that there is only dabba, there is no match in it. Okay, then take it. So I have this matchbox and I have this coin. This coin also, I was thinking that I will ask Dr. Satyanarayana to give me a coin. I did not, when I was giving list of requirements, I did not put coin in that list, but I thought I will get it. But when I was paying this toll tax at Sealink, 70 rupees. So they return 30 rupees in coins. So I have it. So I have put this coin here in between this drawer and this outer cover. So I put it here. Okay? And my experiment will last hardly 4-5 seconds. And that coin has been pressed so that it is at this horizontal level. and I'm holding with one hand, and with the other hand I'm tapping. Right? Okay? Although you are very distinguished people, but I will still ask you a question the way I ask my teachers, school teachers. Okay? Why this coin came out, came up? What's the reason? When I'm not touching the coin, right? I'm not pulling it up. I am tapping this box here from the top. And this coin is coming up. So what is bringing it up? Inertia. Okay.
Third law.
Very good. Yeah, I'm collecting the answer. I'm not commenting on it. Right. So why does it come? Vibration of the air column. Good. See, this thinking has started. Okay. Inertia and third law. For that, you don't have to think. You have been told so many times inertia, but vibration of air column, this is something which is coming from this experiment. So thinking has started, someone has started thinking. That's a big achievement. In our science education, nobody thinks. Students can think, they are not allowed to think. Teachers need not think. Books are so nicely written. Syllabus is well defined. Questions are almost predictable. The question setters do not think. If they start thinking little bit, he will have demonstration before the parliament, and CBSE will have to give grace marks because the question setter has thought something. So in our whole system, nobody is thinking. If our students are not thinking, if our teachers are not thinking, if our question setters are not thinking, if our book authors are not thinking, then what is the meaning if someone thinks in Delhi? MHRD minister is thinking. Let him think. Okay? So these experiments have this potential. It can ignite thinking. So let me continue. Why did it come up? You can repeat the answer if you so wish. If you think it is inertia, say inertia. If you think it is third law, say third law. You think it is vibration of air or any fourth, fifth, sixth answer that comes to your mind. I am only collecting the answer without commenting. Why does it come up? I am putting a force. At its position, matchbox goes down. Well, right, inertia. Yes, I cannot reach there because I don't see any pathway left. Okay. Coin. So, fine, there are other things also, pseudo force, okay, pseudo force takes it up, good, very nice, friction, yeah, that could be a good answer, friction is, of course, when I am just holding it, the coin is at rest because of the friction only, right, the gravity, that weight is being balanced by the friction which is acting in upward direction. Accelerating frame. Frame you have to choose. Right? Frame choice is our own right.
Dependent observer.
So it's not that the coin is in that frame or matchbox is in that frame, therefore it is happening like that. Frame we have to choose. I can choose the lap frame. So nobody can stop me. And if you choose matchbox frame, it's fine with me also. If you choose the coin frame, that is also fine. So frame choice is ours. So I'll be analyzing from the lap frame. Okay. Now let's first come to inertia. Or first, let's first come to the third law. Right? Third law is that if you have action in one direction, you have equal and opposite reaction force in the other direction. So when you say third law, which force is action and which force is reaction? Which force is action?
Tapping.
Okay. My fingers are tapping the matchbox. My fingers are exerting downward force on the matchbox. So what should be its reaction?
Force in opposite direction.
By? On whom?
Pseudo force.
No, I'm working from lapharam. Don't go to pseudo force. Anyway.
Matchbox on your finger.
Yeah. The action reaction forces means if A exerts force on B, B exerts force on A in opposite direction of equal magnitude. That is action reaction, that is Newton's third law. So if action is my finger is pushing the matchbox in downward direction, the reaction will be matchbox is pushing my finger in upward direction with the same magnitude. Where is the coin coming into picture? That is inertia answer. I'll come to that. Okay? So action reaction, there is a problem because the question is why this coin is coming up, right? Why this coin is coming out of this box? So for that question, if I say that since I am tapping the matchbox downward, so reaction of that is that coin is coming up. That's very, very hazy. Right? It's not Newton's third law. It's not action-reaction pair. Coming to inertia. See, this coin is coming upward. Right? So it is slipping on the matchbox in upward direction. The coin is slipping on the matchbox. These surfaces are in contact. Right? It is inside here. So the two surfaces are in contact. And then it is coming out of the box. That means it is slipping on the matchbox in which direction? Slipping in? So which direction there should be frictional force on the coin? So the frictional force on the coin is downward. And the weight is also downward. Is there any upward force on this coin? I am talking from lap frame and I have right to do that. So don't talk of pseudo forces. The matchbox surface that is pushing it in downward direction. Friction is in downward direction. The weight is in downward direction. Who else is there which can interact with this coin? I am not touching the coin. I am not exerting any force on the coin. The matchbox is touching the coin and therefore matchbox is exerting a force and that force is downward. No one else is touching. Then no touch force, non-contact force, earth, that is also downward.
So when you tapped, the friction wasn't sufficient enough to take it down.
Okay, fine, good, very good. So the total resultant force on this coin was it zero? Can it be zero? There are only two forces in vertical direction. Of course, the normal horizontal forces are there, but I am looking for the vertical motion. So there are only two forces, one by the surface, other by the earth, both are downward. Can the resultant vertical force on this be zero? If two forces are in the same direction, they cannot add to zero. And if there is a resultant force on the coin, can you still talk of inertia? Newton's first law. You cannot. So it remains at its own place and matchbox goes down. Is not valid, it cannot remain at its own place because there is a resultant force in the downward direction. And during that coming up, that resultant force is more than its weight. So not only that it is accelerating downward, it is accelerating with an acceleration which is more than g, because it is adding to mj. Okay, so this coin has to go in the downward direction because there is a resultant force on it in the downward direction. Then as you say, yes, it is going down and it is going with an acceleration, and that acceleration is not small, it is more than 9.8 meter per second square, maybe 10.2 or 10.3 or 10.7 or 11.2, don't know, depends how much is the friction, how much is the friction coefficient, how much is that normal force and all those things. But then there is a limit, the frictional force has a limit depending on what mu is, what n is, it cannot exceed a limit mu times n. So there is a limit, this acceleration cannot go beyond that limit. So it, coin is going down with an acceleration more than 9.8 meter per second square, but then there is a cap, maybe 10.3 let us say, or 10.5 let us say. But the match box is being tapped by me hard enough and it is under my control. How much force I am giving it in the downward direction? There are other forces, weight of the matchbox, frictional force by the coin on the matchbox, I am holding from my left hand, all those forces are there, but the dominant thing and which is under my control is this tapping. So if I tap it hard enough so that the matchbox is going with an acceleration more than that upper limit 10.3, then the matchbox will go more, coin will go less, and then the coin will come out of this matchbox. Okay, so that's the phenomena. So teaching Newton's first law, second law, third law, right? For years. From class 9th it starts, I believe. Newton's first law, Newton's second law, Newton's third law. And even when you go to your first year, BTEC first year, you still get Kleppner's book where again F is equal to ma and all those things come. But these kind of experiments will really shake the mind, will really put you in that frame that you will enjoy, okay, this is Newton's law. So that enjoyment is very necessary. That divine experience is very necessary. If an event has occurred 100 years ago, can you be an eyewitness of that? When you see the night sky and if you realize, okay, here is that Orion constellation and that middle star is 224 light years away, so I am being eyewitness of an event. Light was emitted from there which occurred 224 years ago. So that kind of feeling, that kind of divine experiences with the phenomena, once you start getting that, once those eyes are opened, then you really become a committed physicist. Okay. Now, I was teaching a class 11th student. This was about a few months ago, and that was on formation of nodes and antinodes. If you have string tied at two ends and then put a tuning fork there of appropriate frequency, and then you see fundamental mode of, you know that?
Yes.
Fundamental mode of vibration, then the first, second harmonic, third harmonic, this and that, and these many antinodes and these many nodes. Students learn on all these things very well. And they can do all the algebra and this and that. But somewhere students have this doubt about all these things. If this string is tied at two ends only, the whole remaining string is free, then how come there are some points which do not oscillate at all and some points which are oscillating? So who is stopping these points from oscillating? So that is a kind of suspicion always is there. So I have felt that, because when I teach, I interact so much, students are able to express all their problems and these things with me. So for that I have designed this experiment. Okay, and for that this is a chimta, you know, what do you call it here? Chimta only, right? Good. So if I have this chimta, and this chimta is a very good tuning fork. Can you see node here? Huh? I'm sorry, you won't be able to see. But front.
Yes, sir.
What mode it was, and now what mode it is? Can you see a node here? So what I have to do is, I have to adjust the tension. Because this chimta has a particular frequency of vibration, that's fixed. This thread has a particular mass per unit length, that is fixed. But tension is in our hand. So I am holding this other end between those two fingers of my foot, and then I am pulling it slightly and releasing it slightly to change the tension. And if I change the tension, then you can see that, and if I can adjust the tension in such a way that whatever nu is equal to V by 4L etc. is satisfied, then I can see the nodes and entities. This is fundamental. And somewhere here you should be able to see the node. Okay? It's here, right? So once they see the nodes and antinodes with their eyes, in the standard experiment, what is there in the schools? You have a sonometer wire fixed on a wooden box, and then there is a tuning fork. You hit the tuning fork, put it on the box, you don't see anything. And therefore you put a small paper cap there, and then you say, look, paper cap has gone up, is flying, so there is a vibration. Then you change the frequency, take another tuning fork, change all the tension etc., and then put the paper cap here and say that here it does not go up, here it is going up, so you have a node here, an antinode there, and so on. But the simple home apparatus, a chimta and a thread, and 2 minutes of practice, you can create nodes and antinodes on the string. And you can show your students that, look, nobody is stopping them to vibrate, but they are not, they are opting not to vibrate. Okay, once that experience is there, once they have seen it, and after that all that V by 4L, V by 2L, first harmonic, say, they will start making sense. Otherwise it is only to write in the examination. So these are some lower level experiments. At class 6 level, I teach class 6 also, class 8 also, we have some schools in our campus for underprivileged children, so there I go and I teach. So in class 6, there is a statement in their book that air exerts pressure from all directions. Have you gone through this statement in your textbook?
Yes,
sir. At summer stage? Air exerts pressure from all directions. Now, is there a direction of pressure? Is pressure vector quantity?
No.
But the all books write like that, the air exerts pressure from all direction. Okay, what they want to say that air exerts force from all direction, depending on the object on which this force is being exerted. So that surface, it is perpendicular to the surface. So if you orient the surface this way, air exerts force this way. If you orient the surface this way, air exerts force this way. So for class 6, I use this experiment, and I train my teachers who come to in contact to use that. This is a syringe, and since now everything is disposable, so it's very easy to get. any health center, any hospital, wherever there is pathology lab, you will have plenty of them, and they have to throw it away. So you can bring whenever you get short of it, you can bring some 20-30 from there. So I always collect from my health center, IIT Kanpur. So normally I love to go inside the audience, but I don't see any way to go there. It's okay. So what I do is I hold it, and holding it is also very tricky. So there are two parts, one is this piston, one is this barrel. So piston I don't have to touch, two fingers here and the thumb here, so the piston can still move, okay. Only the barrel is being held, it is like this, thumb here and the two fingers here, it is like this, right. See this experiment, how many things it will teach. Sir, pull. Don't pull it out. Okay. You have to exert some force. Tight, not easy. I told you not to take it out. Okay. So just pull it 2-3 centimeters and hold it there. So you have to exert force.
In which direction?
You tell me. You are exerting the force.
Oh, outward.
Yes. Okay. So always teacher has to tell. The students will ask the question and the teacher has to answer. Okay. So you are exerting the force, and now you know that you have to exert force in this direction.
Right.
Once again. And now leave it. Now when you left it, what did this piston do? You have already left.
Right.
So you have not exerted any force on this. So what has exerted on this force on this piston to take it in this direction? The only thing which is in contact with this is air. Okay? The only thing which is in contact with this part here is the air, because I have only left it. So the air exerted force on this flat area in which direction? Where is east in this room? This is east. This is east. So this will be north. So the air exerted force from north to south direction. Correct. You pull it 2-3 centimeters, hold it. Very difficult. Now leave it. In which direction did the piston go? West to east. And what object exerted force on this?
Air.
Air only, because only that is in contact. Right. So air exerts force from west to
east.
Air exerts force from north to south. Air exerts force from south to north. Any direction you orient, 10 different directions you orient, and then say that, okay, see it is going in this direction. So air is exerting force in that direction. So air can exert force from all directions. So that is one. And then you can go ahead, pressure difference. Inside also there is an air, and when I am pulling, that volume is increasing, same mass of air, because I have closed this opening here, so same mass of air, whatever is trapped in this small this nozzle, so only that is expanded. So when expansion takes place, pressure goes down, so from inside force is less, from outside force is more, Newton's law and all those things. And you can do the opposite also. Push it, okay, and then leave.
Bounces.
So it bounces back, okay, it comes back. So that inside force is more than outside force, because it is going in outward direction. So many of those concepts you can discuss in class 6, class 9, class 11th, or even higher. right? What do you need? Zero cost, right? Zero cost apparatus. This is another thing. If your apparatus is already familiar to the student or the audience, then that connection gets connection is made in easier way. If you have an instrument where there are so many dials and so many switches and all those things, and you, okay, I am going in physics laboratory, then you do it in that fashion. I have to do an experiment. But if you are familiar with chimta, you are familiar with syringe, you are familiar with bottle, and then you are bringing out some physics concept, then that emotional bonding with the subject is easier to make. Okay? Okay, now let me take Joshi ji ka danda. I call it Joshi ji ka danda because this was originally shown to me by a person from Bombay only, BARC, some Joshi.
MC Joshi.
MC Joshi. I do not remember that initials, but we call it Joshi ji ka danda. This experiment is Joshi ji ka danda. Now let me take my bag. Okay, one volunteer from backside. I please come. I am not able to communicate with you more closely, so at least you can come. So what is your name?
My name is Anju.
Anju. Can you estimate what will be the weight of this bag? 2 kg. So how many newtons earth is exerting in the downward direction?
2 into 9.8.
So that is 20 earth is exerting 20 newton force on this bag in downward direction. How much force you are exerting on the bag in upward direction?
Same
20 newtons. Which direction? Now, instead of giving it in your hand, let you hold this meter scale here, one hand only, and can you make it stay? Difficult. So now, how much force the earth is exerting in downward direction? And how much force you are exerting in upward direction? More than 20 newton? Same, okay, very good. Okay, very good, very good, wonderful. Okay, keep exerting 20 newtons of force in upward direction. Please, only 20 newtons, not more than that. Keep exerting, okay. One hand. You can exert force of 20 newtons with one hand, right? You have any doubt on yourself? You can exert 20 newtons of force in upward direction, no problem, and for 5 minutes you can do that. All right, so please exert 20 newtons of force in upward direction. Yes, 20 newton, only 20 newton, not more than that, only 20 newton you have to exert. Why what torque? See, Newton's law says that. Newton's law says that if you have to keep it in equilibrium, the total force has to be zero. Okay? Center of mass of the system doesn't matter. So if you have to keep it in equilibrium, you only have to exert 20 newton of force. So why you are not able to exert 20 newton of force? See, when you say Newton's second law, whatever the kind of motion of the, and of course it is not moving at all. Even different parts are moving in different ways, the center of mass will stay at rest. It was at rest, it will stay at rest if the resultant force is zero. So if I am saying that I am holding it this way, let us see, let me try. Okay. I am finding it very difficult, but I am managing it somehow. The center of mass is at rest. The bag is at rest. The scale is at rest. everything is at rest. So the total force exerted on this bag scale system should be
zero.
Rotation, torque, all those things are there. But if the center of mass is at rest, the total force must be zero. And total force on this bag scale system is force by the earth and force by my hand. Is there any third? Is there any third object which can exert force on this bag scale system? Yes.
If total torque is not zero, still center of mass can be at the same position.
But tell me this thing. Tell me, is there any flaw in this statement? I know that the center of mass is at rest. I can see that it is not moving. And therefore, the resultant force on this system must be zero. Any flaw in this? when you do this statement that if total force is zero and the center of mass is at rest, should be at rest, is there a condition that the forces should be collinear? Is there a condition in that?
We have a non-rigid body.
Non-rigid. If the parts are not moving with respect to each other, it's as good as rigid.
But
if
the hand, there will be a
spring
action.
But I am talking of scale bag system. What happens to you is your problem. Your spring action in the muscle and all those things is your problem. I am concerned with how much is the force you are exerting on the bag scale system. Since the bag scale system is at rest, the total force should be zero. Earth is exerting 20 Newton, not more. So you are also exerting 20 Newton. So why 20 Newton force exerting this way, if you exert, it's so easy. And this way, if you exert, it's difficult. And if I put the bag here, it becomes very, very difficult. Okay, very difficult. I have to apply only 20 newtons of force. So what's wrong? Yes, 20 newton only.
No sir.
Newton third law.
Sir, not the force that your hand is applying on the scale to keep it there, but the scale is also applying a force on your hand because of
exactly
balance.
Exactly. So the force applied by the scale on my hand should be equal and opposite to the force applied by my hand to the scale.
Yes,
that is Newton's third law.
So what I meant is that if you are holding like this, this is applied to 20 Newton that need to take care of the weight. But since there is a torque to balance that torque, this part of the scale is applying a force on the top portion of your hand which you need to balance.
So finally, how much force I am applying on the scale? Finally, how much force I am applying on the scale?
More than
20 newtons. Okay. Say 30 newtons. Do you agree with them? No? I also don't. Suppose my hand is applying 30 newton in the upward direction and earth is applying 20 newton in the downward direction. So there will be a resultant force on the scale bag system, 10 newton upward direction, and therefore there should be an upward acceleration of this whole system and it should fly up and hit this projector. It's not doing that. I'm not applying more than 30 newton, more than 20 newtons. You tell me where this is wrong. My arguments, tell me this sentence is wrong.
Your hand is applying force on the scale from two directions.
Correct.
So there are three forces.
Okay.
So all three forces constitute the equilibrium.
Fine, then go ahead. That's fine. But I will still say that okay, I am applying from here, but I am applying 20 newtons. Because I believe in Newton's first law. It is at rest, earth is applying 20 Newton, I am also applying 20 Newton.
Some point of your hand has become a point of rotation.
Okay.
So, you have to balance this rotational
dynamic. Very good. Whatever you say, I will say very good. Tell me where is mistake in my statements.
Sir, whatever force are applied, its vertical component is 20. That force is more than that.
So there is a horizontal component also. Very good. So on this earth back system, earth is not applying any horizontal force. My hand is applying a horizontal force. It should accelerate in the horizontal direction.
It's not the force which you require to hold the back, but it's a couple of forces you require to hold the back.
You
cannot talk in terms of the force.
Huh? Right? But no, that statement remains valid. I have faith in Newton's second law also. Right. So I am applying same force or more force?
More
force. So it should go up with acceleration and hit the roof. So see, these kind of questions can come up only if you are having a scale, having a bag, doing it in front of the audience and then driving people to think. No matter what you do on the blackboard, how nicely you choose your problem and solution numericals, this kind of thinking, this kind of analyzing, this kind of coming up with possible alternatives, so that's the training. So more than the physics content, I am interested in you start thinking, analyzing, coming up with your solutions, your designs, curiosity, all those things should, so that is where the strength of these small experiments are there. Okay, now please, I'll explain. Very nicely said, both of you. I am applying forces, my hand is applying forces from this side and that side. Yes, I am applying 20 newtons. In one case, I am applying 20 newtons, like 30 newton from here, 10 newtons from here, the resultant is 20 newtons. I am applying 20 newtons. When the bag is moved, I am still applying 20 newtons, but that 20 newton is not coming like 30 and 10, it is perhaps coming 60 and 40. I am applying 60 newton from here, 40 newton from here. So I am still applying 20 newtons, but my hands are paining. In the previous case, it was 30 newton from here, 10 newton from here. Fine, that was tolerable, but now 60 newton from here. In place of 30, it has become 60, and in place of 10, it has become 40. So that's why it becomes difficult for me. I'm still applying 20 newtons. Okay, then you can go for all the torque analysis, etc., etc. Why? Why I'm doing that? Whenever you hold something, you can see that the points where I'm applying forces are not in the same vertical line. I have to hold it this way. Correct. These two points are not in the same vertical line. I cannot do that. So this is now you come to torque. This is creating a torque, and that torque is balancing the torque due to gravity. So when the torque due to gravity has increased, this torque has to be increased. The distance is fixed. I am holding in the same fashion. So the distance is fixed. So what I will have to do? I have to increase each of this upward also and downward also to maintain the 20 newton intact. That Newton's first law will still be there, no matter what is the point of contact and this and that, torque, blah blah. Newton's first law will still be there. So that 20 newton I have to maintain, but at the same time that increased torque has to be balanced by these two forces. Distance is fixed, so I have to increase both the magnitudes to increase the torque to balance that. So that is this analysis. Okay, how much time you will give me more? How many minutes?
As much as you want.
Organizers will have their own constraints. Another 10-15 minutes. Okay, now can you give me that wall? Please go to this. Slightly, let's see. To see colors of the white light, what do we do? Prism. Can you see the colors? Can you see the colors? Are you able to see some color here and some color here at the end, periphery and the center? Let me try from here. Yes, I can see the colors. The inside is reddish and outside is bluish, right? So to show that white light has several colors, you really don't need a fine slit and then a prism and then screen or spectrometer, nothing. It's a simple lens, convex lens, simple convex lens, hand lens. Even the smaller lenses will do the thing. Right? The big lens I have taken because it's visible from distance also, and nothing else. Huh? There. This should have been fair enough. Huh? Want to see on that side also? Ha ha. Let's see. Leave it there. Okay. There. Yeah. Fine. Yeah. Leave it there. Okay. This podium is there. Okay. You can see the colors now. Which color is inside? Other way now. On this side, if you project, red will be inside, blue will be outside. And in this side, if you project towards east, blue will be inside and red will be outside. So this is called east-west effect in optics. And see what happens. See what happens. Blue is inside, red is outside. And now? Red is inside, blue is outside. Okay. Here, blue is inside, and here, blue is outside. Right? So you can discuss many properties of optics from here. Different colors are having different refractive indices. Therefore, they are bending in different ways. Blue is meeting somewhere earlier. Red is meeting somewhere later. Put the screen here, what happens? Put the screen there, what happens? So many of the things on refraction and spectroscopy, you can start from here, right? Good. I have a compass here. Very good. Okay. So that shows that Earth attracts everything. Now, some volunteer whom everyone believes. Okay. So he has the confidence that everyone believes him. See, this is a compass, right? One is red end and one is white end, correct? Now these people said that this is east, so right to the east is south. So this is south. So tell me, this red end, is it south or it is red? Which pole it is?
Usually in the compass, the red is the north.
North, but here?
I don't know.
this side is south,
yeah.
And this red is pointing towards south.
So
this red should be south pole.
South.
Correct.
Correct.
So the red is south pole. Remember. Now I have a magnet. I have magnetized it by rubbing. This is a cycle spoke, and this is a cycle spoke. I have made it a magnet. Okay. Now I am bringing it close to this end, close to this red end. What it is doing? Repelling or attracting? Repelling. Okay. So what pole is this?
North. No, actually this is south.
South pole. Now I am inverting and bringing the other end close to the same red end. Repelling or attracting?
It's repelling again.
So what is this pole?
South.
So I have.
Unipole does not exist.
Everyone should believe him. The red end of the compass is south pole. I am bringing this end of my magnet close to that red end, and he will tell whether it is attracting or it is repelling. It is
repelling.
Repelling. So this is now I am inverting and bringing the other end close to that red part. What is doing?
Repelling.
Repelling. So which pole is this? So a magnet has similar poles at the two ends, south and south. Want to do yourself?
It's repelling.
Other side?
It's repelling.
Repelling only. So how many poles a magnet has? And these two poles should be
north and south.
North and south. But my magnet is a special magnet, IIT Kanpur magnet. It only has south poles, this end as well as this end. So what I have done? Where is the north pole?
Maybe at the center.
Try. Bring that center.
So attracting.
Attracting. And bring it close to this north pole. Repelling. So this is north pole. So this is south pole. This is south pole. This is north pole. So a magnet has how many poles? A bar magnet has three poles. Wrongly people say that a bar magnet has two poles. A bar magnet has three poles. One here, one here, one in the middle. People say that the maximum strength is at the ends. Have you read these statements in the textbooks?
Yes, sir.
If you have a bar magnet, the maximum strength of the magnet is near the two ends, two poles, and the middle portion is least. Wrong. I have the magnet in my hand. A strong magnetic field here, a strong magnetic field here, and a strong magnetic field here. This also repels or attracts this compass. This also attracts and repels this compass, and this also attracts and repels the compass. So even the century old established facts must be questioned, right? For centuries, people are telling in all textbooks, in everything, everywhere, a bar magnet has two poles, or any magnet has two poles. One is north pole, one is south pole. And if it is a bar magnet, then in the middle area, the magnetization will be minimum. And at the end, near the poles, the magnetization will be more. For centuries, people are saying that should be questioned. How did I make it?
Sir, it might be that in the middle there might be some gap.
See, try.
It's not there, but
feel it.
There is no
gap. It's one single cycle spoke. So one single cycle. How do you magnetize by passing the current and by rubbing the permanent magnet also you can do that. So textbooks say that put the magnet here. Say north pole here, and then rub it this way, remove, and then bring it back. This is how you have to do. So it's north pole here, that magnet, permanent magnet is north pole here, and you are rubbing. So what will happen? The south pole will be created here and north pole will be created here. This north pole will drag all the south poles with it, and we leave it there. Okay, you leave it like that. Very simple. Take two magnets, start from the middle, two north poles here, and then rub it this way, and then remove, bring it here, rub it this way, and remove. So north pole is dragging the south pole. So this north pole is dragging south pole here, and this north pole is dragging south pole here, and leaving north pole here at the center. Simple imagination from the same idea. So if you have that vision, thank you.
Thank you, sir.
If you have that vision, that whatever is written, I can go beyond that. I can make new things. You can come up with many new things. Now, one fancy thing I want to show before, maybe before organizers say stop. So let me do at least one fancy thing. Brought with so much care. Okay, let me do this one. Let me do this one. If time permits, then I will go with that. Yeah, you can bring out this tape. And put one layer of tape on this glass slide, okay, lengthwise, just one layer. Now I have these two plastic sheets, they are called polarizers. So what color is this? Look at the color, okay, just look at the color. Red? Is it red?
No.
Is it green?
Yes.
Is it yellow?
No.
Is it blue? And this is a glass slide. What color is this? Red? Red? Transparent, no colors, right? Now I put this glass slide between the two polarizers. Can you see any color? Red, green, blue, yellow, orange? No? No? No. Now what we are going to do now is, you know the cellophane tape which is used for putting on the envelope when you want to close the envelope. So we will put one layer of that tape here, okay.
Yeah, you are giving us, I hope this is not also a puzzle.
Next experiment, we'll take it back, take it up. But in the meantime, let's do some more experiment. Someone come. Just one volunteer here to perform the experiment. Ha. Yeah, you just stand somewhere here and look at the image of the bulb in this tiles. This is a normal tiles that we use in our construction. So this part is very shiny and smooth. So can you see the bulb, image of that bulb in this?
Not.
Just position yourself so that you are able to see.
Yeah,
no, you can see. Now I am giving you a polarizer. Look at that bulb image, okay, through this. Are you able to see the image?
Yes.
Now rotate this polarizer and see what happens. Intensity is
increasing.
Increasing and
decreasing.
Significantly or slightly? About half. You can see it very nicely that it is decreasing or increasing. So if you have to do this, if you have to teach polarization, you can just take this, a bulb, a tiles, and one polarizer sheet. Of course, polarizer is something which is not very common, but all those glasses, polarized glasses that you wear, 2000 rupees polarized glasses that have this property, so that can be used. All right. Repeat this experiment. Look at the image through the polarizer, rotate the polarizer and tell what difference you are observing. You had done this experiment from one position and now you are doing the same experiment with the other position. Any difference? Okay, do it once again and then do it from the other place. Just keep in mind what you are seeing. Slowly you rotate, slowly, so that you can observe things coolly. And keep in mind what you are observing. Right? Now come here. Look into this. From wherever you are able to look. Any difference? Any difference? Now? Look from here. Completely going to zero, almost going to zero. The variation in intensity is very sharp when he is observing from here. When it is intense in some position, that image that he is seeing is very intense. And then when it rotates, it goes to a minimum. Now in this position, that minimum is really minimum, okay? But if he is there and the tiles is here, then also the intensity changes, but the difference is not that much. And if the tiles is here, once again he is finding that intensities are different, but the maximum and minimum are not really very different, okay? That's the observation. Fine. So you can do your polarization classes from here, polarization by reflection, please. Okay, polarization by reflection classes from here. So there is some Brewster angle where it is maximum polarized. All those discussions can be taken over from this small 10 seconds or half a minute experiment. All right. Pardon? But not the mirror. If you put a mirror there, that is also a glass slab, only the polish is there.
Yes.
That is a difference. Now there is an open question. For Brewster, you can get the Brewster angle if you do the experiment nicely. The Brewster angle is supposed to be tan theta equal to mu, refractive index. Now I can calculate the Brewster angle from my experiment. And therefore, I can calculate the refractive index using tan theta equal to mu. So what does that mean? What is the refractive index of this material? The light is not going into it, it is not refracting, it is only reflecting. Still you are getting something like refractive index, tan theta. Brewster angle is very much there. So this is an open question to you, all of you, that what is the significance of this tan theta? I am getting the Brewster angle, and people say that Brewster angle is related to refractive index, tan theta equal to mu. So what that mu that I am getting from my Brewster angle, what is its significance in the context of the fact that I am using an opaque object which is reflecting and not transmitting? Okay, so come back to that experiment. There is a tape here on this glass slide. and the two polarizers, and I am putting that glass slide in between. Can you see any color? Can you see any color? Can you see any color? Blue. And at the end here?
Red.
And somewhere here in this area? Green. So you have three colors appearing. Green here. And then somewhat yellowish here. Reddish, yellowish. I don't know which color you will call. And this is blue. Here there is no color. Here there is no color. And here there is color. And why the colors are different in this portion and in this portion and in this portion. Okay. Right. So, I will close here giving you the hint that the cellophane tape is a birefringent material. Any plastic will do it. Any plastic will do it. So, this cellophane tape is a birefringent material, and all kind of birefringences you can talk in order to explain this. See, once you have seen, once there is a question haunting, how come everything is transparent? Glass slide is transparent, tape is transparent, from where the color is coming? Once this question is there, and to get the answer of that question, now we are learning what is birefringence, what is E-ray, what is O-ray, and finally, okay, that is why this color is appearing here. Then you will learn, the students will learn all those concepts very seriously. They need the answer of this question. But one day you come to the classroom and say, today we will talk of birefringence. We will say, okay, talk. So, these are issues in our science educations, and many of these issues can be very positively initiated from here, handled from here, the scientific temperament can be inculcated from here. So that is why our group is trying to build up these kind of things, going here to there to there, and especially our focus is more on teachers, so that teachers can, because we want the multiplication rate very high. Okay, so if teachers can be ignited, if their minds can be ignited, if they are enthused, if they start feeling physics or science, then okay, yes, that system which is not by default giving me human scientific manpower, human resource, so by defining the system, people are coming to this. So that situation can change over the period of time. So that's what we are doing. Thank you very much.
So thanks are not enough really to for the speaker today. He really stirred up this place, everyone, not just students, all of us. But you can interact maybe a little more over the tea. The tea is just served outside this west end here. Thank you once again.
Then you will not be able to leave. I think you still.